Okay, this week is Parshas Shemoth, a new chumash, a new beginning, no turning back. Someone told me yesterday that he was not aware of this halacha, that if for whatever reason you're part of a community and the community does not lane, you don't have a Sefer Torah 1 week. So you didn't lane the Parsha. And someone told me this was such a Shulchan Aruch. So what do you do next week? The next week, you could lane both parashios, right? Let's say you forgot to lane parashas Vayigash, you were not able to do so. There was no Baal Koreh, or the Sefer, so you didn't have a Sefer Torah. So the comes parashas Vayichi, so you lane two parashios, you lane Vayigash and Vayichi. But if you don't lane Vayichi, or you don't lane Vayap Kudei, or you don't lane the Bar B'chukoy side, the last parasha, and now it's the next week, you can't go back. You can't, because once you come to a point of chazak, venis chazek, that's it, the end of a sefer, there's no going back. So that has very great significance. We think that we come to end of a parasha, the end of a chumash, chazak, wow, that's significant. Chazak at Shabbos, chazak, venis chazek. The truth is, the beginning of a sefer is even more significant. Because the beginning of the sefer is a point where there's no going back. When you come to parashas chazak, no, we're finishing the parasha. But you're still connected to the past. The biggest proof is you can go and you can lay in the parasha from last week if necessary. But when you come to the beginning of a new chumash, it's a new beginning. There's no looking back. New start. And that is very significant in what we try to accomplish when we begin a new chumash. Okay, now first, what? I guess seven. I guess you double it up. If you would go back. What?
Not to look back at the past.
It depends. You can look at it both ways.
Oh, you might try to.
Those who don't learn from the past are doomed to repeat it.
Okay, let's go further. Now, let's begin with a short... Okay, this word, I like this word. This word comes from Rebbe Yashiv, Zechet Tzadik Levrach. It's a beautiful word. It's a very short, simple word. It's a powerful word. This is Parashah Miriam. She told her father, take back your wife, your chevet, have children, your gezer is worse than Paro. And Amram listened to his daughter, and they had a child, and she told her father, this child will be the Moshiach Shel Yisrael. She had prophecy. And then came 3 months later, they had no choice but to abandon Moshe, to put him in the Nile in the Teva. So the Pasuk says that she went, she did not give up hope. She went outside and she watched her mother put the baby in, Moshe Rabbeinu, in the Teva. She stood at a distance to look. Chazal tell us, she had no doubt that Moshe would be saved. She had no doubt. She was faithful, because she was she had prophecy. The prophecy that he would be Moshe. The reason why she went to go look was to see how he would be saved. That's it's not just to see if he would be saved, or to be hopeful, will he be saved? Her emunah was so great, she was confident for sure. It's just a question of how it's going to come about. So Rav Eliashiv says, we see from her a very high level of emunah. Very, very, not just to say what will happen, how will happen. And with this we can understand why Moshe Rabbeinu was not mispalel for Kolev at the time of the Meraglim. When Moshe Rabbeinu sent the 12 Meraglim to spy the land of Eretz Yisrael, so Moshe Rabbeinu took aside Yehoshua, or didn't take aside, but was mispalel ko Yoshiacha Me'atzas Miraglim. Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a pasuk, Moshe Rabbeinu was mispalel, Hashem should save you from the evil plans of the Miraglim. But we do not find anywhere that Moshe was mispalel for Kolev. How? Why not? There were 12 Miraglim, 10 of them turned sour, 2 of them were tzaddikim, and from the 2 tzaddikim, one was through the influence of Moshe, but one was good luck. How did it happen? So Rav Eliashiv says the reason why Moshe did not need to be mispalel for Kolev was because Chazal tell us that Kolev was married to Miriam. And Miriam influenced, it says, Avdi Kolev, this is what Rav Eliashiv says, Ruach Acheres Hoyesobo. He had a Ruach Acheres, a different spirit within him. What was the Ruach Acheres? His wife. was her. It was Miriam. Why Miriam? Because Miriam showed from the earliest times the incredible emuna, and there's no question. Rabbi Yashav says that emuna spilled over to her husband, the influence she had on her husband, and that was the ruach acheres shehoisebo that protected him from the atzas mirag. It was a very, very interesting part relating to shiduchim. Okay, now let's go to another idea. We have two words in Tanakh which seemingly mean the same thing. The word Madua, this is the one that comes from Rabbi Avraham Yitzchok Shein. Rabbi Shein, this is your cousin.
He just lost his mother.
So he has this beautiful sefer called Birchas Ish. Save Birchas Ish, a few svarim, and he has a very beautiful idea in this week's parasha, explaining the difference between two words in Tanakh, the word Madua and the word Lama. All over Tanakh we have these two words, and they both simply mean the same thing. Why? Madua and Lama. What is the difference between these two words? So he explains as follows. The word Madua, Kohid is also a Malbim. The Malbim also is very into explaining the words. Always means when you ask a question, you want to know the answer to the question. I really want to know what's the reason for a certain. I'll give you a few examples in a moment. The word lama is a rhetorical question. I don't want the answer. I just am expressing my amazement. Why did you do this? Like, I don't want you to tell me an answer. I don't want an answer. Or I know the answer. I just express my frustration or my bewilderment or the wonder of why this thing happens. I'll give you a few examples. Yisro says to his daughters, Madua miharten bo hayom. Why did you come back from the well today so quickly? Yisro wanted to know. It wasn't a rhetorical question. What happened today? There's something spectacular happened by the well today. I want to know what's going on. Madua miharten bo hayom. Yosef, when he sees the Sar Hamashkim and the Sarif, he says, Madua pneichem ra'im. Why do you look so sad? What happened? He really wants to know. Another example. Yisro says to Moshe, Madua ato yoshev levadecha. Why are you sitting alone? Why do you attempt to judge the entire Klal Yisrael, 3 million people, 600,000 men, 3 million including the women and children, alone? You need a support team, you need some help, you need a system. So the word Madua always means not necessarily. Okay, but I know he wants to understand the. Okay, I hear what you're saying, but generally speaking, the word Madua is a question. You really want to understand the answer to the question. On the other hand, the word Lama always has a connotation of bewilderment. For example, Lama nachbeisa levroyach. Lavan says to Yaakov, why did you run away? I know why you ran away. I know why you ran away. But still, Lama nachbeisa levroyach. This can't get better than this. Hashem says to Avram Avinu, why did your wife? I don't want an answer from you. I'm just expressing my frustration. She's not on a madrega. Why wasn't she on a level to have a muna that she will have a child? Yeah?
Lama sakariyacha.
It's also a rhetorical question. That's exactly what's forcing. If since generally speaking, the word madu and the word lama means rhetorical question, so we're forced to understand that it is a rhetorical question. Moshe Rabbeinu knew there was sinas chinam. Why is there sinas chinam? I don't want an answer. I know why you would, because you hate him. But my question is, this is not a derech. You'll always find a reason to hit someone. But lama, this is not a good midah in Klal Yisrael. This should be sinas chinam. Okay, so that's this is a general thing. I just derech agaf. Going off topic. By when it comes to the Haggadah, what do we say? Ma nishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylos. Now the word ma comes from the word lama. It's the same shurish, lama. Why don't we say madua nishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylos? So the answer is the child is not really looking for an answer. It's wow. When the child says, Ma nishtana halayla hazeh, the child knows the answer. The child went to cheder, they taught him all the answers. The child is saying, the goal is to bring the child to the seder, and the child says, wow. Look how incredible this night is. Look at what Klal Yisrael is all about. We've come to a moment, we commemorate Yitzhias Mitzrayim. You want the child to say, wow. to appreciate who he is. You don't want the child to come to the Seder and say, I want answers. I got questions and I got answers. The goal of the Seder is not to give answers. The goal of the Seder is to raise up the child that Mimela on his own he will understand the answer. Okay, but he's not looking for an answer. He's saying, wow. So the word lama is a form of wow. Okay, but that's the side. Now, based upon this, there are two psukim in this week's parsha. So I thought, Rabbi Rapport, you're coming to address this question. There are two psukim in this week's parsha, which seemingly would be more appropriate to say for the word lama to appear. And this, Rabbi Shane says, we learned an incredible Musar Haskell from these two psukim. Let's jump to the end of the parsha first, where the noksim, okay? The hanoksim otsim lemar kalu maasim dravi biyamo. Okay, the hanoksim means the taskmasters. These were the Egyptians, and they appointed Jews, like they had this in the Holocaust in the concentration camps in the ghettos. They appointed these people. These were Jews, and they were to oversee their fellow Jews. So who were the kapos? They were the shoytrei bnei Yisrael, and they were in charge. And if the Jewish people did not provide enough bricks, did not accomplish the quota for the day, then who would be punished? The kapos, the shoytrei. So the pasuk says that the shoytrei, they did not force their fellow Jews to fill their quota, and they were punished. Vayuku, they were hit, they were smitten. Shoytrei bnei Yisrael, asher samu aleihem noksei paro lehem, which were appointed by the taskmasters of the paro. Madua, not lama. Madua loichli sem chokhem lilbon kismol shulsham gamtmol gamim. Why is it that you have not finished the required quota of the bricks yesterday and the day before and today? Today, yesterday, the day before. Now, seemingly, shabi madua, lama. We're going to punish you because you did not do. We know why. Because you're lazy. The Jewish people are lazy. You're not doing your job. You're not. And therefore, you are going to be punished. Seemingly, the more correct word would be lama. It's a rhetorical question, not looking for answers. They know the answers. They know that you're just lazy, and this is all an excuse in order to bring about your suffering. But that's not what it says. It says here the word madua. Likewise, in the beginning of the parasha, when Miriam and Yocheved, when they disobeyed the command of Paro, and instead of killing the firstborns, they not only do they not kill the male children that are born. The male children, they even provide them with food and clothing and take care of them. So Paro says also the word madua. Pasik vatirena hamyal pasik vayikra malach melach mitzrayim lamalados v'yemer lohen madua asisen hadavar hazeh vatechayena es hayaladim. Similarly, you should say lama. Paro knew the answer. You don't want to listen to me. Why is the word madua? So the answer of Shane gives is a very fascinating answer. Is that the truth is Paro, a goy, a non-Jew, their attitude is always what's in it for me. And it was hard for the Paro to understand, and for the Noksei Paro to understand, if you have the ability to accomplish something for your benefit, even though it's at the expense of someone else, you would do it. You would go ahead and do it. Here, you are in charge. You have the ability to force your fellow brethren to produce more bricks. Just work a little bit harder. They'll produce more bricks, and then you will not suffer. What is in it for you? Madua, they really wanted to know the answer. Are you being paid off? They could not understand why these one Jew would be so kind to allow another Jew to have a little bit easier life, and at an expense of him suffering and being beaten and being punished. The midwives, they would be punished because they could easily fulfill their role, and that would bring them great benefit. They would receive a promotion. Paro would pay them very well, and they would receive great benefit. Likewise, these Jewish people that were in charge of the labor, they would receive reward. They would benefit. And yet, they're letting their fellow Jews slack off. The midwives are not killing the children, and they are going to suffer personally. Why? What do you get out of it? What benefit? It's something which a non-Jew is not able to understand. And that teaches us indirectly that by Klal Yisrael, there's something called you do something l'shma. Not everything you do in life is for money, is for personal gain. In Klal Yisrael, there's a midah that you do something l'shem shamayim. Here it was kedai, these people, these shaitrei v'nei Yisrael, it was kedai for them to suffer. To suffer physical abuse, torture, just so that their fellow Jews should not have to work a few extra hours. It was kedai. I'm not getting any money for it. I'm not getting any comfort for it. In fact, I'm going to suffer greatly. This is the hevdil mimizrach lemayrif, yoyim v'layla, between a guy and a Jew. A simple Jew understands you do a favor, a chesed, mika amcha Yisrael, for your fellow Jew, with no desire to have gain, benefit, kavod, and by a guy. You see this sometimes. You go among the guy and you work with them, and they, for what? Why are you doing this? What's the bottom line? How am I going to? Am I going to make a penny on this? I have to make my. I once dealt with a car. I had a whole crazy story. It was a terrible album that was done, and I was dealing with a car salesman. A whole crazy story, and he realized it was a terrible thing that happened, and he could easily, just by pushing a button, reverse the entire thing. But technically, he has over here. He's going to get again $150 out of the whole thing. So he says, "I can't do it. I can't press the button and lose $150, even though it's 100% wrong, because I won." And what does it mean? What am I going to get out of this? What am I going to get out of this? I have $150 here in front of me. I know it's wrong, but no one's going to catch me, and everything is legal. Morally, it's wrong. But madua, what am I going to get out of it? This is something that a guy does not understand. There are morals, there are values. Not everything in this world is about money and covered. There's a calling in life, there are other things, and that's what you see here in this parasha, the difference in a Jew and a guy. Madua, what do you get out of it?
But this is based on the assumption that Paro knew the difference between the word Madua and Lama.
No, you don't need to come on to that. The question was this: I just don't understand why you're doing this.
When they asked the questions,
yeah,
Miriam, for example, and Yocheved, so we're Madaiyik, the fact that
Paro said Madua. Paro said, I don't understand. I don't understand why you're doing this. Paro, the Torah is, it's not likely that Paro actually said the word Madua. The Torah is recording the conversation, and the Torah records the conversation with the word Madua to indicate that Paro really did not understand this concept that a Jew would do something for another Jew without an expectation of getting anything in return. And that, Derech Agav, teaches us that's exactly what we should be doing. That in life, you shouldn't always look to take advantage of someone else. There are times when you do things because it's the right thing to do, even though there's nothing for you to gain from the situation. Yeah.
Yehuda made the decision to sell Joseph. The pasuk says, "When Yehuda alach ma betza."
Yeah.
Rashi says, "B'mamon," with money.
Ma betza. There it's ma.
No, but the lashon b'mamon, meaning he was looking as for. We have no advantage if we kill him, right?
Yeah.
So let's sell the money off the deal. That's the pasuk. The pasuk.
Okay, but that was a very cake. Okay, that's a different thing. You have to analyze that parasha separately.
The midah, really, saying the midah of the Jew,
yeah,
they don't look at monetary advantages.
What you're
just
saying.
Okay, I'm not sure. You have to analyze it in more detail. We have to look at it more. I'm not sure. Yes, I'm good. Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, but one just short ha'ara, before I went with this another major idea I want to discuss, but one just short ha'ara, we have in my Matan Torah of this idea of Cholam Royim Es HaKoilos by Kabbalah's Torah. So what does that mean? I don't think we really understand what it means. They saw the Koilos, it means a much greater, intense understanding of Ein Adoymeh Shmia L'Ri'iyah. Who gave us the Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu. So this idea of Royim Es HaKoilos really starts in this week's parasha. What does it say about Moshe? Moshe was put in the Teva, and Paro's daughter Basi came out to the seashore, and she saw him in the Teva. The Pasuk says she saw a Nar Bocha. does not say you would expect the pasuk to say that she heard a child crying. But yet it says, let me read you the words of the pasuk. Let me go back here. Vatered bas par luchot zal hayarvid arselchos al yad hayar vatered es hateva. She saw the teva soich hasuf vatishlach es amos vatikochecha vatiftach vatereu es hayelat. She saw the yelat. Vihine nar boicha. You'd expect the pasuk somewhere here to say that she heard the child cry, but she saw the child cry, which indicates that the cry of Moshe Rabbeinu was not a cry of sound. It was a cry that was nicker in sync. And in fact, there's something very unusual about this pasuk. The pasuk says that he was a nar and he was boicha. A nar is a term that's used for an adolescent or someone that's a young adult. For example, Yosef is called a nar.
Right.
When someone's 17 years old, he's called a nar. Someone 17 years old doesn't cry. They're very proud, they're very confident, they're very strong. A child, an infant, is boicha. Moshe Rabbeinu here is described as a nar, that's boicha. And in fact, that's why it says the word vihine. The word vihine is a word which uses something which is unexpected. You expect a baby, a tinoik, a yelad, to cry. But you don't expect a nar to cry. Moshe Rabbeinu was on a level, even as an infant, as a nar, as a mature adult, but yet had the emotion within him to cry. Where else do we find the exact same thing by Yosef? Yosef is described as a nar, and throughout the entire story of Yosef and his brothers, the pasuk over and over says, he cried. He turned aside and he cried. He met his brothers, he cried. He met his father, he cried. Every step of the way in the encounter between Yosef and his brothers, it mentions that Yosef HaTzadik cried. Yosef and Moshe are very much related. Yosef was the one that predicted whoever will produce, whoever will come along and say Pakod Pakadati will be the Moshiach Shel Yisrael. Moshe was the one that fulfilled Yosef's prophecy and said Pakod Yifkod Elokim Eschem. Who was the one that involved himself in retrieving the Atzmos Yosef when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim? Moshe. We find over here this very strong relationship between Yosef and Moshe. What is the deeper meaning? The deeper meaning of relationship, they both had the midah of nahar boicha. They both are described in the Torah as being a nar, and yet, although they're mature, they're adults, they are confident, they still have emotion where they can cry. That is the ideal midos one needs in Jewish leadership. To be a nahar, have the midah of confidence and youth, vigor of a young adult, but to have the sensitivity to other people and to cry. Vihinei nar bocha. And this, if you go a step further, it's not just something which is pride. It has to be something which is to see. V'chol ha'om royim es ha'koilas. You have to go even a deeper level. This unique blend of nar bocha is something which is not only heard, it's v'chol ha'om royim es ha'koilas. It expresses itself in a much greater form of something which is visible and tangible to the entire world. Okay, that's a short idea. It needs to be developed a little bit more, but I just thought it was an interesting idea. Okay, I want to go to another idea. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to see Moshe Rabbeinu for the very first time, he appears at the burning bush. Vayar Hashem kisar liros. Vayikrei lov Elokim mitoch hasne vayomer Moshe, Moshe vayomer hineni. Chazal take note that often in Tanakh, when Hashem appears to a person, Hashem says the name of the person twice. Avraham, Avraham. Yaakov, Yaakov. Shmuel, Shmuel. And here, once again, it says Moshe, Moshe. However, Chazal do take note that there's a very big difference between this Moshe, Moshe, and Avraham, Avraham, Yaakov, Yaakov, and Shmuel, Shmuel. In that, there, in those other three places, there's a psik. There is a hefsik between the first name and the second name. A psik means there is a line in one of the ta'amim, or the nikud, it's a vowel, nikud, it's a part of the mesorah. You're supposed to slightly pause. Avraham, Avraham. Yaakov, Yaakov. But here, By Moshe, Moshe, there is no psik. He just leads one to the other. Merecha tipcha, Moshe, Moshe. What is the significance? So in fact, there's a Medrash. The Medrash says that when Moshe heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu say his name twice, Moshe thought, it's a bizarre Medrash, we don't understand what this means, he thought that Moshe is on the Madrega of Avraham Avinu and Yaakov Avinu. Just like Hashem said to Avraham, 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 Hashem said to Yaakov, 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 oh, Hashem also was calling me twice, Moshe, Moshe, I'm on their Madrega. So Hashem says to Moshe, the next Pasuk, Moshe, Vayomer al Tigrav Haloim. No, 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 no. Don't think you're on their Madrega. Don't come close. Avraham, Avraham, there was a psik. There was a hefzik in between. Yaakov, Yaakov, there's a psik. Later, there'll be a shmuel, shmuel. But you, Moshe, no, 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 no. Al Tigrav Haloim, you're not on that Madrega. You're only Moshe, Moshe. What's going on over here? So I saw from Rav Shane, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Shane, he also explains, I want to add something, a whole different idea into this idea, but he also explains the basic meaning of this idea is that when the name is repeated twice and there is a psik, there's a complete repetition. When there's a psik, that means there is a complete repetition. Then it's Lashon Chiba. When you love something, you say it twice. Avraham, Avraham. Chazal explained, Lashon Chiba. Here Hashem repeated his name. Yaakov, Yaakov, Yishmuel, Shmuel. But when there is no psik, it's not Chiba. The reason why I'm repeating your name is because I have for you a double mission. I have for you a mission, one mission, where you'll accomplish, and then there'll be another mission. Avraham, Hashem only had one mission for Avraham Avinu, to be the father of Klal Yisrael. The reason why Hashem repeated Avraham's name was Hashem loves Avraham, Chiba Yisera, Yaakov, Yaakov. But Moshe was given the command of Pakod Pokadati. Pakod Pokadati is a double expression. I will surely remember you, Pakod Pokadati. And there are numerous interpretations in Chazal. What is the double remembrance? So one interpretation is you take them out of Mitzrayim. The second mission will be to bring them to Har Sinai, take them out of Mitzrayim, bring them to Eretz Yisrael, or really there's going to be the Geula Rishona, and then there's going to be the Geula Achrona, Pakod Pakati, I'm going to remember you now in Mitzrayim, and ultimately I'm going to remember you when you're in Golis, I'm going to bring the Geula Shleim, I'm going to bring Mashiach. There's going to be a double role. Therefore, the repetition is not out of Chiba, it's out of, I need you. I need you to accomplish multiple tasks. That's why I'm calling you by a double name. Therefore, Al Tikav Halam, don't compare yourself to your predecessors, Avraham and Yaakov. Now, I want to elaborate upon that with something that we just did in Sefer Daniel. We learned Sefer Daniel. I got very excited. We learned about the word Rishyoin, right? Kirishyoin Melech Paras. And I told you there are two interpretations. Two interpretations which have, there's a parish from the Rashi and a parish from Menachem. One of Rashi's contemporaries, or maybe he preceded Rashi slightly, and he wrote this thing called Machperes, and they differed slightly in the exact meaning of what Rashi admits. They basically mean the same thing. It means permission, but it can mean either Rishos, or it can mean the utterance of the lips. Aresh Sefasein. And we elaborated, it's a very big nafkamina. Is it written permission, or is it oral permission? We have here another case where there's a difference between Rashi and Menachem in regard to the name of Moshe. Let me read you the word Moshe. What was Moshe's name? So we know the famous Medrash. Moshe has 10 names. We say this on Simchas Torah. There's one of the piyutim that we recite on Simchas Torah. We mention all of Moshe Rabbeinu's 10 names. And there's even a name that's not mentioned, Bishagam. The word Bishagam, Bishagam Hubasar, is Moshe's 11th name. But one, the name that stuck with Moshe is Moshe. Who gave him that name? Basya Basparo. The pasuk emphasizes this. Vatikra Shemo Moshe Vatomer. Why am I calling him Moshe? Ki min hamayim mishisiu. It comes from the word Mosh. I have drawn him from the water. Okay, in fact, that's why this is Parsha Shemos, the Eila Shemos, B'nei Yisrael, a name is the presence, identity captures the essence. Let's see over here what it says in Rashi. Fascinating Rashi, similar little thing like the name of Moshe. Mishisiu, what does it mean, Mishisiu? So Rashi says, Ki Targum. Rashi very often is fond of the Targum, right? They're also very good for this week's Parsha. Shemos, Shnai, Mikvich, Targum. It means Shechalte. Ki Targum, the Targum's word is Shechalte. It means to draw. Okay, v'hu loshoin hoitza b'loshon arami, ki mishchal b'nisa michelba, to draw a hair out of milk, uv'hu loshon ivri, mishisihu loshon hasiroisif. Rashi gives a more precise translation of lahasara, hasi roisif, to remove, mosh. Mosh means to remove. And he goes on, he gives examples. Kamo lo yomush, lo moshu. He goes on, he gives a whole interpretation. He says, guess what? It's not original. Whatever I'm telling you comes from who? It comes from Kach Chibro Menachem. My friend Menachem, who wrote a sefer called the Machberes, he translates the word mosh. It comes from the word Moshe has a shirish of two letters, Mem and Shin. Mosh. And he proves it. And Rashi says it means hasara, l'shoin hasiroisiv. Rashi says, I disagree. There's no such shoresh memshin. I disagree. And Rashi goes on and says, v'ani oimer she'enoi mimachberes mosh v'yimosh. I disagree. Elo migizras mosho. V'l'shoin hoitzahu. It means hoitzah, to extract. And he goes on, he gives examples. Seemingly the difference between Rashi and Menachem is, can a shoresh come from two letters or does it come from three letters? Rashi says it's come from three letters. Menachem says it comes from two letters. There's a word called mosh. And Rashi says, no, that's not the right word. The right word is the word mem shin hei. And he brings rayos and he says, ulashoin hoitzahi. Now you have to analyze in great detail, which I'm not knowledgeable. But there's one little point I want to make is that and it's a very fine difference between hasara, hasiroi siv, which is, you have to go into details, hasiroi siv, and the word hoitzah. The word hasiroi siv has a connotation of, let's just get out of here. The word hoitzah has a connotation to leave for a purpose. Okay, you have to study all the psukim which Rashi and Menachem bring. In other words, let me give you an example. Let's say you're in a room, you're in your location, and you're in room A, and you want to go into room B. When you go from room A to room B, are you leaving? What's your primary intent? To get out of room A? It's a bad environment. Or is my primary intent, I want to get to room B? All right, I'm going from room A to room B. I can't take it here. I gotta get out of here. I don't really care where I go. Just let me get out of here. Well, no. I'm happy here, but I want to go there. There's something very interesting, very important, very pleasant in the other room. That is the difference between Rashi and Menachem. The word hasara has a connotation of get me out of here. I don't care where you take me. Take me to Siberia. I don't care. Just get me out of here. The word hoitzah, if you study the word hoitzah, the way it's used, the hoitzeisiv, itzalti, v'goalti, v'lokachti, and it's always used in the process of we're going somewhere. We have a destination. I want to go somewhere. Moshe Rabbeinu, Machlokes, the name of a person captures his identity. Parsha Shemos, Ve'ela Shemos B'nei Yisrael. The name Moshe captures his mission in life. What is Moshe's mission? What is his mission? His mission to get him out of Egypt. Egypt is the Erev Az Ha'aretz. Had they remained there for one more moment, they would have sunk into the 50th level of Tum and it would have been beyond repair. But Moshe did not only take them out of Egypt, Moshe also took them to Har Sinai. He took them to Eretz Yisrael. He took them to the doors of Eretz Yisrael. I'm taking you somewhere. It's not so important where. We got a destination. What is Moshe's primary mission? He had two missions. Take him out of here and get him to Har Sinai. Or get him to Eretz Yisrael, however you want to look at it. Go somewhere. What is Moshe's primary mission? That's the Machlokes, Rashi and Menachem. If you learn that the word Moshe comes from the word Mosh, like Mosh mitoich oil, I'm in this place. I don't want to get out of here. Hasara, Rashi very precisely translates Hasara as a connotation of get me out of here, just get out of here. Moshe's primary mission in life was get the Jewish people out of here, out of this place. But if you learn like Rashi, no, I'm not like Menachem. I don't like Menachem. That's not Moshe's tafkid. Moshe's tafkid is hoitzah, which has the connotation we're going somewhere. We're going to get out of here to go. We're leaving room A to go to room B because it's not so important to get. It's where we're going. That's the goal, the destination. Mimela, it's a whole different shayresh, it's a whole different mahalach adotnim. Now take that and plug that into what Rabbi Shane said. Rabbi Shane said, "Moi, you have a medrash. Moshe, come. Hashem says to Moshe by the burning bush, oh, Moshe, Moshe. Two Moshes. Moshe. Moshe, oh, wow, Hashem's calling me by my name twice. I'm just like Avraham, Yaakov, Shmuel. No. There, I repeated the same name twice, the Zelba name twice. Here, I'm not repeating your name twice. I have two missions for you. Pokoi Pokadati. What's Pokoi Pokadati? Ribbono Shel Olam is saying, there are two Moshes. There's a Moshe, this is a Jewish capital D. Rabbi Axelberg. Moshe. Hashem is saying, I got here a recruit. What's your name? Well, Menachem says that your name is Moshe. And Rashi also calls you Moshe. They call you Moshe for different reasons. One is to get them out of Mitzrayim, and one is to get them into Eretz Yisrael. Pokoit Pokadati. Hashem says, Moshe. He calls him by his name twice, because the word Moshe ain't achinami. Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. There are two Moshes. There's a Moshe midin Rashi, Moshe midin Menachem. They have a double role Moshe. It's Pokoit Pokadati. Get you out of Mitzrayim and bring you into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, one more short word. We have over here a very, very interesting Rashi. We have this. We have here Vayhi Bayomim Horabim. No. I'm wrong. Being a parak base. Okay, this is a very important idea. Vayelach Ish mi base Levi Vayikach Espas Levi. Ah, who is the base Levi? Who is the Ish? This is Amram. Vayikach Espas Levi. Who he gets married? Mazel Tov. Who does he marry? He marries Yocheved. He was already married to her. Second marriage. Machzik Gerushasai. Why did he get divorced? Because things got tough. Kol Habein Hayilah Hayor Tashlichu. He gave up. I give up. He gave up. And when Amram the Godel Hadar gives up, it's over. The whole Klal Yisrael gives up. What happened? Why all of a sudden did he change his mind? He had a daughter, Miriam, a little child, new generation. New child says, let me read you the words of the Rashi. Powerful, powerful stuff in this Rashi. Vayelach ish mi beis Levi, vayikach espas Levi, parash hoya. Levi got divorced. Mimena mibnei gezeras paro. And guess what happened? V'lok v'choza v'lokcha. He remarried her. V'zeo vayelach shaholach ba'atzas bitoy, his daughter. She'amru lo, the daughter said, father, you're worse than paro. Gezeroscha kosha mishal paro. Im paro gozer al hazuchodim. V'yata gamkein al anekevois. V'ach zero v'osma likuchim shneem. V'yaf hinebcha liosnara. A miracle happened. She became like a young woman. V'bas kuflamet. She was 130 years old. She nolda b'voyim l'mitzrayim. Ben achoymois. He also he goes to the whole thing over here, and they got remarried. Fine, wow, a little child convinced her father, you're making a mistake. You have to be optimistic. You have to have faith. Don't be from the old timers. It's old generation. They give up. Okay, what happens next? She gives birth. Vatahar ho'isha vatelebein vatere also kitoifu. Oh, it's a good child. But it's been shloisha yachin for 3 months. But then, v'lo yachlo oid hatzpino. But they were able to hide him for 3 months. How in the world were they able to hide him for 3 months? Rashi says, shemonu lo hamitzriyim miyoyim shech zira. Because when they remarried, they just got married, so we can expect they'll have a child soon. So they counted. V'hi yiladato l'shisha chadoshim v'yom echad. It was premature. Moshe was born premature. Preemie. Okay, they were not expecting this to happen. So they didn't come to make an inspection until 9 months later. Okay. That's what it says over here in Rashi, here in the Chumash. But this Rashi really cut as a Gemara, and Masech the Sota, and Rashi, in fact, in Tzolot, brings over here the source, Sota. There's another opinion, Masech the Sota. Moshe was born full term, 9 months. Why then were they able to hide him for 3 months? Because when Amram divorced Yocheved, she was already 3 months pregnant. Amram had, he was married to Yocheved, she was already 3 months pregnant, maybe they weren't aware, maybe they were, whatever it was, and now, oh no, there's going to be a churban, we're going to have to, so he divorced her. And then his daughter Miriam convinced him he's making a big mistake, so Amram took back. The Mitzrim were not aware that Miriam was already 3 months pregnant. Yocheved was 3 months pregnant. They were not aware, so they began. They counted 9 months, but really Moshe was born full term 9 months, 6 months later, because 6 months later was 9 months since the time of his conception. Okay? That's the another opinion in Masechta Sot. Now, I want to work with that opinion, because it comes out of here something fascinating. In Halacha, it's a very complicated halachic issue. What happens if a woman is a non-Jew and she's pregnant? And she becomes a geyores while she's pregnant. And she gives birth. So there's no question that the baby is a full-fledged Jew, because the baby was born, the lady was born when the mother already converted to Yadus. But still, the baby was conceived when she was a non-Jewish woman. Now, what's the nafkah mean in halacha? It's not for now, but this, in halacha, there are two critical moments in the creation of a human being. There is the moment of conception, and there is the moment of birth. These are critical in halacha. And they're nafkaminas, and the nafkaminas where a woman converts when she is pregnant. On the one hand, the fetus has kedushas Hashem midin leida, but he's missing something. The fetus is missing the kedushas Yisrael mishas Heroyon, the time of conception. It lacks a degree of kedusha, and there's a chashal of yichus, there's a yichus of the father. There are nafkaminas lahalacha. Two different critical moments in the creation of a person. We have here in this week's parsha two Moshe Rabbeinus. There's a Moshe Rabbeinu who is conceived, and there's the birth of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu's conception takes place in Perek Aleph. Perek Beis begins, Vayelech ish mi beis levi vayekach espas levi vatahar ho'isha vateled bein. According to Rashi, the Gemara himself, the Sota Vatahar, really, she was already pregnant from before. So, Ferish Gemara. She already was pregnant. Now, just the pregnancy went forward. Vatahar means the pregnancy continued in 6 months more. Vateled bein. The birth that's mentioned over here is taking place in a new generation. A generation of the young generation. Miriam convinced her father, this little girl convinced her father, things are going to be okay. Be optimistic. New blood, new generation, new chizuk. But Moshe was conceived before Vayelech Ish mi Beis Levi. He was conceived in Perek Aleph, the Eile Shemos, the old timers, Shemos Bnei Yisrael Haboy Mitzrayma. There was Yaakov Yishu Beis Aruvim Shimon, and we have over here all the Paru VaYishutzu VaYibav Yatzmu, and then things got tough, things got difficult, and they started killing the Jewish children, and they started issuing gezeros, and Amram gave up. Amram was an old timer from the old generation, and he conceived. He fathered Moshe Rabbeinu, but then in the middle he gave up. Comes out, Moshe Rabbeinu's conception was part of the old generation, and his Leda was the new generation. This is the essence of Jewish leadership. A Jewish leader is a person who's with it. He's born in this generation. He's the Leda, is current with Miriam, with what's happening now. But he was conceived. His roots can be traced all the way back to the Mesorah, to the values and the hashkafa of what took place, the carryovers of the old generation. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu was an ideal candidate for Klal Yisrael. He had the balance of being part of this generation with the ideals and values and hashkafa and the mesorah of the old generation. The whole essence of Moshe Rabbeinu is the conception was from the previous generations, but the Leda is in this generation. This is the essence, the mahus of Jewish leadership. Okay, with that, I wish you a wonderful Shabbos.